This BizNews briefing is brought to you by Investec Business Banking. Make the move from business as usual to Investec Business Banking. Well, it's Wednesday and it is the 14th of May 2025. I'm Alec Hogg. Well, in the top story of today's BizNews briefing, load shedding is back. Here's my colleague Chris Stain, who caught up this morning with Kevin Milam. He is the spokesman on electricity for the Democratic Alliance.
What are the biggest red flags that have popped up in the committee in recent months, Kevin?
Wow. Well, there are a number. So obviously, the independence of the transmission operator, the system operator, and the national transmission company. That's one. The second is the various rules and codes that are administered in order to allow people to trade electricity, to connect to the grid. So you've got the grid access rules, which are administered by ESCOM and written by ESCOM. We need to make sure that that's independently administered and independently monitored. So I would argue that that should be dealt with through NERSA rather than through ESCOM. Secondly, the market code, which has just recently been released, there needs to be some work done on that. We need to make sure that our market is competitive and that it has the robustness that is necessary to ensure, first of all, that we have a reliable supply of electricity, but secondly, that our grid is stable and able to manage multiple sources of generation as well as multiple off-takers. And that's something that we need to focus on. From an ESCOM perspective, obviously, there's a huge issue around reliability and maintenance. There's an issue around the energy availability factor, the uptime. We need to make sure that improves. You know, they've been talking about a 70-75% target for their energy availability factor. Well, the reality is they haven't hit 60% once this year. So they're a long way off that target, and a lot of work has to be done in that regard.
Now, a couple of years ago, the electricity minister expressed grave concerns about sabotage at ESCOM. What is happening with regards to that now?
There's a lot of work being done to clean up the problem areas where there's been misconduct, where there's been financial misconduct, where there's been criminal misconduct and the like, where people have been putting stones in amongst the coal and things like that. So there's been a lot of work done in that regard. I think that we've come a long way in that respect, that there's certainly less, to use that word, sabotage, than there was before. I don't think that we will ever get away from people taking chances and the like. But the people that I've met on the ground at ESCOM in the plants take their job seriously. They take their work seriously, and they're doing the right thing. I think there are unscrupulous people, and I think that certainly the department and ESCOM are taking steps in that regard to weed those people out and take the necessary action against him. It's not happening as quickly as I would like, but there are steps being taken.
Have any fresh allegations of corruption come your way?
I haven't seen any for a while. I'm certainly chasing up on many that go back to the state capture era and the like, but I haven't seen any new ones of late. So hopefully things are improving in that regard. Now, obviously, I would like to see ESCOM succeed. I think that ESCOM is a key role player in South Africa's electricity sector, and we need to make them succeed. But we need to make sure that electricity is both available to all South Africans and affordable to all South Africans. And then we need to take into account our commitments to climate change and environmental responsibility and the like. But availability and affordability are key factors, and ESCOM plays a big role in that regard. So we need to make sure that ESCOM is able to do that.
Hmm. Well said, Kevin. Muntengu Mining, you probably haven't heard of it. It's a company listed on the Johannesburg Stock Exchange, fairly recent addition to the list, and it's a pretty small business worth under 200 million rand, which for a listed company is not really such a big deal. But it's been a fascinating story. Its shares have come down from around 2 rand to 58 cents at the moment. And the chief executive, Mike Miller, reckons the reason for this is that there's skullduggery at work. And he reckons that the central character is one Ulrich Bester, who's the chief financial officer. Ulrich Bester is also associated quite clearly with another very colorful character in the Johannesburg set, Zunaid Motti. So I asked Miller in this little excerpt that you'll see now how Zunaid Motti happens to become involved in a alleged skullduggery at a small cap JSE company. The full interview is on BizNews TV. It's riveting. Let's have a listen to this bit.
Yes, I don't know Mr. Motti at all. I've never had a business dealing with him. But what happened in June 2024 is that we issued and we obtained two urgent orders. One was an Anton Piller and one was an interdict against Ulrich Bester. It's a very tightly controlled process where you've got independent lawyers, accountants, the sheriff, etc., executing the raid to make sure that your chain of custody is correct. And whilst the raid was happening, Mr. Motti phoned one of our executives and asked us for an urgent meeting to resolve this issue as gentlemen. So the first point I would make is out of the blue, we get a phone call from Mr. Motti in the middle of the raid saying, please, can we resolve the issue? As a board, we made the decision to go and listen because we didn't understand to what extent, really what we were dealing with. We met up at Mr. Motti's offices on the Monday Monday afternoon. In the meeting was Mr. McGowan, it was Mr. Bester, the tobacco attorneys, Mr. Motti, his son, and a couple of others, myself and the CFO were there. And in that meeting, it was clear that Mr. Motti knew far too much about our share price. No normal person outside of, as you said earlier, it's a complicated process with complex, it's just not something that ordinary people would understand. He made a joke in the meeting that he would short us to 10 cents. I then responded saying to him, please short us to 1 cent. And when we issue our first earnings report or dividend, the market will then outmuscle this. And that was really the end of the meeting. We could see at that point that something was really amiss. And again, that's not us, shaking the tree and wanting to take on Mr. Motti. He's a very serious business player, way above our league. But we didn't call him. He called us in the middle of a raid. And that's really what we've had to deal with. And it was since then that we've had criminal issues, obviously. As you mentioned in the beginning, we've had drones flying over our offices. We've had hits put out myself and the CFO. We had our senior engineer hijacked with a mock assassination about 6 weeks or so ago. And even today, coming into this meeting, we've got two suspicious vehicles with AK-47s near our Zerust operation. So these aren't figments of our imagination.
What did Motti want in that meeting?
So on the face of it, he wanted to resolve the share manipulation issue, the fact that we had executed an Anton Piller. But clearly our agendas were all misaligned. And we realized at the end of it, there was no gentleman's agreement to be had here. And we continued to be, obviously exposed to the manipulation through that period.
But what was his agreement? What did he ask for?
There wasn't a formal ask in the meeting. I think what the intention was, or the market intention, or the agenda of the meeting was to try and find a gentleman's mechanism of kind of smoothing this over and not taking the investigation further. Now, obviously, that's not something we can do. Once you start an investigation like this, as I said earlier, you've got to follow the evidence unemotionally, get to a considered view, and then look at all your legal options. And again, that ended for us when we knew we couldn't do anymore, and that's why we handed the matter over to the Hawks.
It's a really interesting interview, as I said, riveting, not least because he alleges that the JSE has been captured and the surveillance department at the JSE in particular is not helping, that they know who did the trades, they know who drove down the share price for reasons that he articulates in some detail in that interview. And yet the JSE is washing its hands, Pontius Pilate-like, of the whole matter. A really interesting interview. Go and have a watch of that, Mike Miller. Well, onto the international front, and still coming up, we're going to give you some very useful insights into Palantir, which has been the best performing stock in the BizNews portfolio, more than a 10-bagger in the 2 years that it's been, sorry, 3 years that it's been in the portfolio. It's the third anniversary this May of when I met the CEO of Palantir, Alex Karp. But that's coming up in a moment. First, last night, Donald Trump shook up geopolitics again with a speech in Riyadh in Saudi Arabia, where he agreed to end U.S. sanctions on Syria. He said he'd look to do a deal with Iran, and he's welcoming a fresh $1 trillion, yep, $1 trillion in investing from Saudi Arabia. Bloomberg's Joanna Burchetti was on the spot.
The speech happened right behind me. You can see the hall is emptying out now, and it was an electric atmosphere. This was a really significant moment for Saudi Arabia, the fact that President Trump is here. Obviously, we spoke about the pomp and pageantry, the visit that he paid to many of Saudi Arabia's mega projects. They had booths in the run-up to delivering this speech. And before he went on stage, we also heard from the Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman. He gave a few remarks in Arabic, saying that that $600 billion number, that investment figure that came out about an hour ago, they're looking to increase to $1 trillion. And in the run-up to this, of course, there's been a lot of focus on the deal-making and the deals, the commercial deals. President Trump referenced that, some of the ones that had been signed. But what was really notable from his speech is how much of it was about the geopolitics of the region. And actually, we got a much better understanding about how this administration is thinking about their priorities. Anne-Marie was just talking about some of the lines that he said about Iran, and that his preference would be to go for a deal, but a deal that is fair and brings about peace, and that if there is hesitation on that front, if they had not signed up to that deal, there's no hesitation on the U.S.'s front to exert maximum pressure on the Iranian regime. He's talked about the transformation that many of these GCC countries have undergone. He's talked about a new Middle East and the fact that looking ahead, there is actually hope for countries like Lebanon. He says he wants to work with the new administration. And then one of the biggest announcements that he made just about 10 minutes ago that received a standing ovation was that pertaining to Syria, when he said that the U.S. administration are looking to remove sanctions, and these sanctions have been crippling the Syrian economy. There had been a lot of discussions, again, in the last few months under the new government there, whether the U.S. would remove those sanctions. That has been a major announcement, and the president credited the Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman for getting that announcement over the line. So we did actually walk away with a much stronger understanding of their geopolitical priorities out of this speech, not just the commercial deals and the deal making.
In the world of business banking, projections, numbers, and your bottom line can often triumph over relationships. At Investec, we value both. That's why we understand that running a successful business takes endurance, drive, and partners who are willing to walk the journey with you. Make the move from business as usual to Investec Business Banking. Out of the ordinary.
At SunExchange, we make going solar simple, profitable, and completely risk-free. Join over 100 satisfied South African customers already enjoying the benefits of risk-free solar. Start saving today. Visit sunexchange.com and join the solar revolution.
How interesting. And that happened last night. And you almost get the sense now that there's some kind of a plan that's come together. We just didn't know that the plan was being implemented. Anyway, we'll hear a little bit more about that later in the show as well from the U.S. Treasury Secretary, Scott Bessent, who ends today's program with some good news for us. But let's get on to that Palantir story. The BizNews portfolio has been spectacularly successful, primarily due to some very good luck in picking up a couple of stocks that have been what we call 10 baggers. They're the elusive stocks. Often in a lifetime, you don't even get one. Sometimes you might manage one. We've had two in the last 11 years. The first was Amazon, which we bought into the BizNews Global portfolio when we started it 11 years ago. And then 3 years ago this month, we added Palantir. Palantir, the reason for that was that I was in the summer Davos in, the World Economic Forum's meeting. It was in May 2022. Usually it's in January, but this time round, because of COVID, they pushed it out to May. And at that meeting, I had the very good fortune of meeting a gentleman by the name of Alex Karp, who is the chief executive of Palantir. I sat in a couple of his presentations at the World Economic Forum and then did a bit of homework and read through the pre-listing statement, annual reports and things like that, and came to the conclusion that this was a stock well worth owning. At the time, it was trading below $9 a share. Today, it's trading at $128 a share. And I guess there are a lot of members of the BizNews tribe who's saying, we've had a fabulous run. Should we be selling? Should we be cashing in our profits? Should we continue to run with this 10-bagger, or in some cases 12 or even 14-bagger, depending on when you bought? On cue, The Economist brought out this insightful piece this week on Palantir. The full 10 minutes is on BizNews TV and on BizNews Premium, BizNews TV for members only and for premium. But here's a taster of what you can find there and a little more about Palantir.
Its success is emblematic of two trends. The first is generative artificial intelligence, or AI. Palantir helps firms adopt it. Second is the growing demand for intelligence and defence technology in a world of border closures and superpower rivalry, where Palantir, more controversially, excels. In both fields, its edge comes from a unique approach to profits, growth and culture. For about 20 years after it was founded in 2003, Palantir did not make a profit. It had the strange business model of embedding lots of highly paid engineers with its customers, handcrafting software to solve bespoke problems. Mr. Karp conceived of these so-called forward deployed engineers, or FDEs, as being like bossy French waiters in high-class restaurants who know what customers want better than they do. They had to be pushy and persuasive. But as their on-the-ground knowledge was incorporated into software products, the number of FDEs per customer shrank, and the business began to scale profitably. In the past 2 years, Palantir's revenues have surged, while its employees, who number 4,000, have barely increased. That has enabled the firm to maintain gross margins of 80% plus. Its new AI platform, AIP, which maps and organizes its customers' data to help them run large language models, is following a similar path. The company's approach to growth is just as unorthodox. A former employee describes Mr. Karp as Palantir's salesman-in-chief. But the firm spurns traditional marketing efforts, such as steak dinners and golf. Instead, it invites customers to boot camps, where they experiment with its products. Palantir starts off with small projects for its customers, and if they are successful, expands across the organization. Pete Serkin, who runs supply chains for Wendy's, a fast food chain, says Palantir's AIP software enables his team to do in 5 minutes what used to take 15 people a day. The rest of Wendy's is interested. That's Palantir's mechanism. They come in and generate such value, the rest of the organization takes notice, he says.
And isn't that what good business is about? You come in, generate such value that the rest of the organization takes notice. And indeed, when you go back to 20 years of investment, 20 years of losses until Palantir started making money, and through those, what did they call them, forward deployed engineers, embedded people in the company, got to know the company really well, got to know how to help them using their own software. And that is the Palantir success story. Well, as promised, we end off with some good news. after an extended period of volatility for stocks and for the world economy as a whole. Here's U.S. Secretary Treasury Scott Bessent, also in Saudi Arabia.
The Vice Premier and I now call this the Geneva Mechanism to prevent any misunderstandings, because President Trump and Party Chairman Xi have a very good relationship, but the relationship did not make its way down through other levels of government. So I think the important thing is that after this weekend, we have a mechanism to avoid escalation like we had before. We both agreed to bring the tariffs levels down 115%, which I think is very productive, because where we were with 145 and 125 was the equivalent of an unintended embargo that is not healthy for the two largest economies in the world. It is not healthy for the rest of the world. So I think we can proceed from here. We have a very good framework, and as I said during IMF week in Washington about 3 or 4 weeks ago, there is a possibility, it's not a certainty, but that, as Ray Dalio might say, we could do a big, beautiful rebalancing. President Trump wants to rebalance the American economy back to a manufacturing economy with high precision manufacturing. I think everyone agrees, including Chinese leadership, that they need to rebalance towards more of a consumption and consumer economy. And the dream scenario would be if somehow we could do that together.
The dream scenario. And cool heads here in South Africa will be watching that, absorbing it, seeing that if the US and China can jaw rather than war, well, who are we to be stuck out on a limb and taking the icy wind of being, well, in the bad place from the world's biggest economy? Now, there's hope. There always is hope. This is Alec Hogg. Till the next time. Cheerio. This BizNews briefing is brought to you by Investec Business Banking. Make the move to private banking service now for your business.